Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
G'day, mate.
Hey, Terry. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. It's now a better time.
Now is a better time. Now is a good time. Yep, I just came up to the house.
So y'all got a downpour earlier, huh?
Oh, darling, it's rained here most of the day.
Yeah.
Rained here most of the day. So, I'm up here sitting down now.
All right. Well, let me just start from the beginning. So, you are from Australia, right?
Yes, mate. Been over here about 34 years now.
Okay, so how did that happen? How did you end up in America?
Well, I decided that I was going to come over here and prove how good I was. And I guess I just forgot to go home. I'm a U.S. citizen now. I have dual citizenship, but I haven't been back since I came here. I've been doing too many things with horses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't know. Was there an opportunity that made you come there, here, or was things bad in Australia, or what? I mean.
Yeah, I had some people in California. Bill and Margot Farrelly, they invited me to start some colts for them. So I came and did some colts for them and then went back, and everybody just kept emailing me to come back. So I came back.
So, and that's what you primarily do is colt starting, right? Do you do anything else but that?
Well, I teach and I put on clinics and I do horse fairs and I try and teach as much as I can about horses to different people, and I have a program here at my house where I have a few interns come in over the years. I've had some good ones, had a few bad ones, but mainly good ones. And they're going on to start businesses of their own and, you know, become horse trainers and are doing very well now, so,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
Did it come natural to you?
I think I was born knowing how to play with horse. I don't know. I just knew there was an attraction to horses. You know, I had some real jobs, but this one seemed to be the one that I was good at.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of colt starting and been in a lot of competitions and won a few, lost a few, but, you know, I've been around the world doing it.
So let me ask you this. Were you, did you grow up around horses?
No. My dad and mom, they worked in town. My grandfather introduced me to horses. And they just became a passion.
Yeah. I know. I talked to a lot of people that, or the horse industry has a mix of people that were like born and raised up around them. And then you have people that just never had anything to do with them until, you know, a particular age.
Yeah. I always liked horses. I've only just started having some professional riding lessons. Now at 68 year old, I decided I'd better have somebody tell me whether I was doing it right or not.
Oh, wow. So you've done lessons before when you were younger?
No, I didn't. I just knew how to ride. I just got on the horse and said, this is how you do it, you know?
Oh, and so it did come natural to you?
I think it did, yeah. My grandfather told me it did. You know, I was a natural at it. So I guess, you know, some of us are born with a gift, you know, and it takes us, some of us, a long time to realize that gift and what to do with it, you know. It took me a long time to realize that I could make a living starting cults.
Yeah. And now, are you...
would actually pay me.
Are you particular about the horses that you take in for colt starting?
I've got more particular over the last couple of years. Up until a few years ago, I'd take anything. But I have an artificial kneecap put in 4 years ago. Full knee reconstruction. So it's... that sort of changed my mind a little bit. And, you know, pushing 70-year-old, I thought I'd better slow down sometime. And my wife said, you got to slow down. So I thought I'd better slow down, you know.
Yeah,
but I help young people a lot.
See what?
I help young people a lot. You know, I like teaching what knowledge I know to younger people that are coming up in our industry. Because I think if we don't pass our knowledge on, you know, we've learned a lot. And they just need to, they jump in with both hands and next thing they end up hurt. And I don't like to see young people hurt. You know, I like to see them taught the right way.
Yeah. Now, you basically do just colt starting at your house. So they'll send you a horse and you start it. And then at what point do you say, okay, this horse is ready to go on to the next person? Or do you finish horses?
Anywhere between 30 and 90 days, people will leave a colt with me. And then I'll take it and either I'll send it to another trainer that does cutting or reining or dressage or something like that, you know. I'm just mainly the person that puts the first 30 to 90 days riding on them.
Yeah. But, well, that's cool. I mean, it's a labor-intensive thing to to do, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're working colts here 7 days a week. We're riding horses. Cleaning stalls or doing stuff around the place, you know. There's always
horses is a lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, that is for sure. That is for sure.
Yeah.
They can be an expensive lifestyle, you know.
They definitely are a luxury hobby.
You know, and I think I was reading something today where 20% of people that have horses have money, and 80% of us have horses, and we are struggling, you know. So 80% of us have a horse, but we live for our horse, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I'm sure you can say, you know, the market's changed quite a lot from what the, you know, price of ownership to have a horse has gone up drastically over the years too, so.
Yeah, and also the horse flesh at the moment is really, really expensive, you know. I've heard just yesterday in Billings, Montana, there was a 29-inch pony sold for $40,000.
Oh, wow.
That's unheard of, you know. A miniature pony selling for that sort of money. I mean, it's, I don't know.
Now, for your clinics and stuff, though, you don't necessarily teach colt starting at your clinics, or what's the difference
I do teach some colt starting clinics, but mostly it's horsemanship and how to go about certain things, you know, or people would have problems with their horses and want to learn how to fix their problem, you know. I'll come along and I'll show them a certain way that has helped me over the years, and hopefully it'll help them.
Yeah.
But
well,
I've traveled the whole
country. Do what?
I've traveled the whole country doing that. You know, I've gone
well,
from
yeah,
the
no,
east
I, yeah,
to the west
yeah,
coast.
I think that's great. I wanted to go back to how you ended up in America, though. So did somebody just call you and say, come live here? Or
somebody saw me start a cult in Australia, and they were American. And they come back here and told somebody else, and they told somebody else. And next thing I get a phone call from Bill Farrelly in California, and he said, can you come out and start some cults for me? And I said, well, yeah, I suppose. You know? I didn't know anybody here except I knew one person. He rodeoed with me in Australia for a lot of years, and his name was Eric Kurtz, and he lived in Lodi, California. That was the only person I knew in this whole country. So I came to his place first off. Then I went and started some cults. And the rest is history. I've been here ever since.
That's wild. That's crazy. I mean, that's cool, though. I mean, it worked out for you. That's cool. Do you? And you said you've never went back to Australia. Does your family come visit you or anything? Or?
No, darling. I've watched my grandkids grow up on Facebook. You know, I have three sisters that are married and still alive in Australia, and a daughter and two grandbabies. But no, they won't leave Australia. They won't leave Australia. I've been traveling since I was about 18 year old. I sort of was the black sheep of the family and wanted to get around and see what else was out there in life.
Yeah, no, nothing's wrong with that. So back to your clinics, you said you've traveled all over the country. I mean, where all have you been?
Oh, I've done 46 states in America. And I've trained horses 46 states. I've got four to go. I've never been to Oregon, Idaho, Washington State, or Alaska.
Do you think you'll make it to Alaska, though?
I had the opportunity, and then I got pneumonia, and I couldn't go. Back in the 90s. But, you know, you never know. I never say never. You know,
right.
I've got those four states, and somebody up there might invite me up to teach, you know, and I might do a cult up there, and that way I'll get those four states covered.
So out of all of the 46 states you've been to, which one's your favorite?
I love Montana. I really did. But I've sort of made a home here in the Midwest. This, where I am in Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, you know, this whole area here, there's a lot of horses in this area. And I think that's what made me settle here, because there were so many people here wanting me, for my knowledge and my experience, to train horses for them, you know. So I guess that's why I end up here.
Yeah. I didn't realize how saturated the horse market was in that particular area. You know, not that I've been living under a rock, but I think it's kind of mind-blowing to know that there are so many horses in that area and people that ride and show and do that kind of stuff.
Oh,
it's cool.
It's a multi-billion dollar industry. I mean,
yeah.
I think the latest from the American Horse Council was billions of dollars this industry is worth, you know, so if I can get one little percentage of it, I'm happy.
Yeah, I just thought it was cool in your particular area. You just don't think of horses being there. Kind of like I had a client in New York, in upstate New York. He did a bunch of hunting, deer hunting, and I was like, there's no deer in New York? And he's like, oh, yeah, it is. And
yeah, you know, and there's a bunch of horses up there, you know.
Yeah, it is.
I started a bunch of colts up there for a place called Blue Chip Farm, and a bunch of warm bloods, you know. So there's a bunch of horses around, I tell you.
Yeah.
This is quite a good area.
Now, you are you closed off to the public at your barn? Like, you don't do you? do you do lessons there? People come and do lessons and come and ride and things of that nature? Or do you just...
Yeah, people come here with their problems, and I help them out with their problems. You know, as far as teach people how to ride, no, I don't do that at all. I help them with their horse problems or with their colts. But I don't actually teach people how to ride. I'll give somebody advice on how they ride, but I don't teach how to ride. As I say,
that's interesting that you say it like that, because there are a lot of people that kind of is how they market themselves. We can teach you how to ride, and we can teach you how to do this. So that's interesting that you say it like that.
Well, most people are here for people. I'm here for horses. The horse is my life. You know, if I can change your way of thinking and make that way for that horse a lot better, then that's what I'm going to do. I want that horse to be better when he came here than when he goes home. You know, and I do trailer loadings and all sorts of things with the horse industry. You know, some of the trailer loadings I've done have been quite hysterical. I've made people laugh. I've made people cry. You know, it's funny. One story, a lady called me one night about 11 o'clock at night. She said, I can't get my horse loaded. She said, we've been trying for 4.5 hours. Will you come and do it? I said, well, not now, I can't. You know, I'm in my bloody PJs, mate. I'm going heading to bed. I'll come over tomorrow. And she said, okay, can you do it? I said, yeah. So I went over the next day, and I went, caught the horse and went down in the back 40 somewhere. And she said, well, aren't you going to load my horse? I said, yeah, I'll be back up there in a little while. I got to work this problems with this horse first. So I worked him around with the flag and the stick and got him moving where I wanted him to go. And as I was coming back to the horse trailer, there was a aluminum lawn chair there. So I picked it up and I took it up and I sat it between the wheel wells of the trailer. And I sat down. The horse was out in front of me on the lead rope. And so he said, well, aren't you going to load my horse? I said, oh, yeah. So I tapped my flag on the ground. I said, load up. And this horse walked around and hopped in the trailer. It was that easy, you know. I've seen some marvelous things, but I think I do marvelous things, you know?
Right.
So people have started to believe in what I do, so that's a great thing, you know? That's a great thing. If people believe in you, then you can have a good business in this industry. If they don't believe in you, then you're not going to last very long.
Yeah. Well, I think results will probably offset that. I mean, you know, I've always thought it was funny if you watch people that preach how to do this and how to do that and blah, blah, blah on the internet all the time, but they don't ever show you any results. I mean, a result is taking a horse and loading it after somebody couldn't versus somebody that can never show you any results.
And the thing people say, why haven't you got any videos or anything? And I said, well, that's because most of the videos out there are people with a trained horse doing it.
Yeah.
And that's easy. They don't want to show you the bad side of it because that'll make them look bad. You know, I just go ahead and do it. You know, if somebody calls me with a problem, then I'll sit down, I'll figure it out, and then I'll go and work with the horse and hopefully figure it out, and we'll get along and hopefully change things for the better, you know, and that horse will come out better when I started, and that person will come out better too with their own horse, you know.
I don't mean to cut you off, go ahead.
You know, I've done 26 Mustang challenges. I mean, that's with the wild horses in this country. They say to the wild. And I've taught them to jump fire and lay down and sit in the back of cars and sit down and, you know, all sorts of things. All sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah, those have become really popular over the last couple of years. I don't ever remember them happening. And then all of a sudden, it's like over the last 6 or 7 years, you have all of these challenges and all these things. Which do the horses actually come from out west where they round them up?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's no actually wild herds this side of the Mississippi. They're all on the western side of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
So you have the Chickasee ponies out here, but they're not really classified as a wild horse.
Yeah, no. I've seen some of the videos where they take the choppers and they round them up, and it's just, it can be brutal to kind of watch it the way.
Oh, it can be, you know, and there's a lot of advocates against it, and, you know, we don't know how to fix the problem. That's the problem. All I know is we've saved about, since the Mustang Heritage started in 2007, I think they've saved about 10,000 head of horses, which is unbelievable.
Well, I got a question. Why are they saving them? Why can't they just live and not be bothered?
Well, because there's 50,000 in holding facilities around now. 50,000 that they've captured. So those horses have got to find a home. They're just sitting
there.
Well,
no, I mean, back up a second. Why don't they leave them alone is my question. Like, why are they even capped? I mean, why don't they just leave them alone?
Because they breed too much, and the water is too scarce in a lot of places. Drought, famine, you know, there's a lot of things go into this. We can't just leave them out there to be wild, because there's about, I think the situation is 6,000 acres taken over by housing developments per year in this country.
Uh-huh.
Right. You take that and the amount of acreage that these horses need to survive, and they're going to run out of room shortly. You know, I don't know what year it's going to be. I hope I'm not here alive to see it.
Yeah.
But if we keep breeding as human race is breeding, we're going to ruin everything. You know, and the wild horses, the ones I've had, are something special about them. They're not like a domesticated horse. They've only got to trust you and they will do anything for you.
I do believe that. I do believe they're very different from, because, I mean, I was just fixing to say, we're concentrated on Mustangs, but we're still breeding domesticated horses, for lack of better terms, on a daily basis. I mean, like, they just keep, I mean,
right.
People just keep having babies and selling them and all kinds of stuff. So,
yes. And we are ruining certain breeds. You know, we have bred horses for a specific event nowadays.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, you're right.
I have seen so many things that in this horse industry that made my mind think, what have we done? If a horse could walk into a tack store and see the shit we've invented for it, it'd run the other way and never let us near it. Why do we have to change so much about God's creature? And that's what I believe it is. You know,
you're touching on a very good point, because I'm a firm believer that if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, me too. You know, I don't know what we're going to do with the industry. It's got so expensive that the ordinary person can't afford it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
I mean, even our little shows up here, I'm a member of the Wisconsin Ranch Horse Association, and it costs us $600 to go and show for a weekend or more. You know,
I remember growing up, my daddy would, it would maybe be $100 max, and you could go to a fun show, and you could show, I mean, we would show all day long from 8 a.m.
Exactly. Now,
to 11 o'clock at night in 20, 30 class, I mean, as many as we could do for probably less than $100. And you would have these shows everywhere. We were busy all summer long showing, like, every weekend. And to hear you just say $600, like, just blew my mind.
that's nothing, you know.
Yeah, I know.
That is nothing. I mean, it's a lot of money to me, you know.
It is to me, too.
Yeah, and I know people that pay thousands of dollars, Sandra, you know,
yeah.
And they might only do one class.
Yeah, I mean, wow.
It's just, I remember it was $2 a class when, I can remember, you know.
Yeah. Well, so hold up. You said, now you've been doing this for what, 34 years?
Yep, here in the United States, yep, 34 years.
Oh, okay. So you didn't move here until you were older.
No, I was 34 year old when I came here, 1990.
Oh, okay, so you trained and did all this stuff in Australia too.
No, I had a real job. And I only trained for myself. I only trained my own horses and a few.
Oh, and then somebody told
I'd only done a handful of horses for other people and,
yeah,
you know, that I got paid for. I never really, mm-hmm. I'd done a lot of horses that I didn't get paid for, but, you know, I didn't know that you were supposed to get paid for that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So
okay,
when
no,
I came
I'm putting
here,
things
I,
together.
Yeah, when I came here, I realized, holy shit, I got to make a living.
Right.
You know, there's no socialized medicine or anything here, so you've got to, you got to make a living, and you got to have insurance and everything else, you know.
Yeah. What was the biggest transition for you? Was it a big change, like as far as lifestyle change, or was it just really kind of easy, just like?
Oh no, huge change. For one thing, you drive on the wrong side of the road. In the wrong side of the vehicle. Many a times in the first 5 years I was here, I'd get in the passenger side and go to drive.
No, I can see that. I would probably do the same thing.
I mean, it was just muscle memory. You know, I'd get in that side and I'd go to drive. I mean, I've been into some hair-raising situations in the first 2 years I was here. I thought I was going to die. And the other thing was how much in... Like, when we go into a store in Australia, you buy a product, you go to the counter, you pay for that product. Like, say it's $2.99. You pay $2.99. Here, you pay $2.99 plus a tax. I'd never heard of that.
So hold on. Australia doesn't do taxes like that?
No. What you see is what you... If it's $2.99, you pay $2.99.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I didn't know what a sales tax was until I came here. I thought that was ridiculous. Cow. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we get taxed to death.
Oh, we do here. I mean, this is the most taxed country in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a quote going around that said, you get taxed on the money you make, taxed on the money you spend, and taxed on... I don't remember exactly how it went, but it's true.
And taxed when you die, too. You know, you just... Every time you turn around.
Yeah.
And it's all to do with the government.
Oh, God, yeah.
They don't pay anything. Them buggers. Mm-hmm. They get it all for nothing.
Yeah.
Plus a wage, plus free medical for the rest of their life.
And then we have to watch them take, I mean, I'm not making it out like I spend a lot of taxes, but, you know, money, it's a dollar or $1,000, it doesn't matter. But, you know, you sit there and you
matter.
Watch them spend
That's right.
your tax money that you sent them on stupid crap, like, you know, trying to ban TikTok.
Yeah. I mean, stupid things. That was a thing that I, when I first came over here, I think in the first couple of years I was here, I picked up a newspaper, and the heading was, U.S. government spends $6 million testing cows' farts.
Wow.
I thought, what? Testing a cow's fart because it's putting a hole in the ozone layer? You just put a rocket ship through it.
Yeah.
I thought, how stupid is this? How stupid? You know, these are dumb things this government does.
You're not telling me anything.
No, I'm preaching to the wrong person. Anyway, let's get back to horses.
My next thing I wanted to ask you was, what is the most memorable problem in a horse that you've had? Like, what's one particular situation, a particular horse that just kind of has stuck with you and throughout your career?
I think I had a horse that came to me that was deaf, that I had to train. And I had to teach him to stop and everything, turn left and right without using my voice. And I'd never done that before. I'd always said woo and the horse would stop, you know. So everything I taught this horse was off my seat and my hands to stop, because that was the hardest thing for this horse to do.
Yeah.
I've done from, I think the oldest horse I ever did was 19-year-old that had never been touched on the place, and she just wanted to be able to ride the horse around the property, so she brought the horse to me and asked me if I could train it, and I said, yeah, I'll give it a go. I wasn't real sure. She said, all I want to do is be able to ride around my own farm. That's all I want to do. I don't want to do anything else. And she left the horse with me for probably 6 months, came every week and rode the horse, and I eventually took the horse trail riding and things like that and got it really, really broke for her, and as far as I know, that lady rode that horse for another 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. See, that's another thing. Our horses are living longer and longer and longer nowadays because of different nutrition we got, better feed and things like that. So it's nothing for a horse to live longer.
Yeah.
Than 29, 30, 31, 32, you know. Before,
I thought 30 was pretty old. That's when my mare that I, you know, was raised on, she passed away at 30. And I thought that was pretty old.
Well, yeah, I was just somewhere the other day, I went to a place and they had a horse that was 35 and it was still alive and eating grass.
Holy cow.
It had lost a few teeth, but it was still alive and still going strong. She said, I ain't putting it down until it's ready to go down. I said, well, you know, when they're ready, they're ready. But, you know, you got to, people hang on to animals too long.
I agree with that. I've promised myself that I'm not going to make an animal suffer for my selfishness.
Neither am I. I've got an old horse retired now. He's getting up, and I don't know whether I'm going to put him through another winter. You know, I promised him this summer that he can go out and eat grass all summer with his girlfriends out there in the pasture, and I'll bury him. And, you know, I won't let him go for another year.
Yeah.
It's too cold up here. It's too cold.
Yeah. No, I completely and totally agree. I can understand when you're in an emotional state because you don't want to lose them and you're willing to spend all kinds of money to try to keep them alive and things like that. But I'm a firm believer that, you know, why put an animal through that kind of pain just so they can stay here with you?
That's
It's still hard, though. don't get me wrong.
I mean, I'll cry like a baby when I got to put this horse down, but that's part of life, you know.
Yeah.
It's part of life.
It is. Now, what is, let me ask you this. Do you ever, now you don't do any breeding or anything like that there, strictly colt starting?
No, strictly colt starting and horse training and horsemanship stuff. That's all I do. I compete in a lot of challenges. I'm heading out your way, actually, out to Pennsylvania here next weekend. Next week I go out for a big colt starting out there. There's eight
That's
of us.
That's
right. Colt starting. Yeah. Out at Clark Quarter Horses.
You're defending your championship, correct?
That's correct, yes. I was lucky enough to win it last year, and they've invited me back to defend it this year. And we've got an international flavor this year out there. There's a gentleman coming from Canada, and there's me from Australia. And, there's people from Minnesota and Montana. They're all over the country coming to this. This is quite an experience.
Well, so let me ask you this. I know I said earlier that, you know, there's been a lot of these challenges, colt starting challenges, Mustang challenges. How exactly does it go? Like, what exactly happens when you enter this thing and you do this event? Because it's not a one-day deal. It's a weekend deal, right?
It's a weekend deal. We get 4 one-hour sessions with the horse over 2 days. Then on the, like, we'll, on Sunday afternoon, we'll give them an hour off after the last session. And then you've got to ride through an obstacle course on that horse. And they can be challenging. Like, they can be drags, they can be logs, they can be bridges, they can be cattle that you got to cut out of a pen, anything. And you're going to do this on a green colt that's only had 4 hours training.
That's what I, okay, so that is the challenge. In order to win
that
it.
That is the challenge. That goes to prove who's the best horseman, yeah.
So, and how many people are entered in it? Can anybody just enter, or that you have to be picked?
Oh, no, it's invite only. Most of them are invite only. And there's 80 in this one. There'll be 4 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon each day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty...
That's intense.
It really is. You know, you really got to be able to read your horse and know what you're doing and to get that horse's trust in such a short time, you know, is basically what you're trying to do.
Yeah, because you've never seen them. You've never touched them. You have no idea what you're going to get.
Nope. All that we know is these horses have all been halter broke. Because you got to go into a stall and you catch your horse that you draw, and it's a draw. You never know what you're going to get until you do. There, catch your horse, you judge on that, put the halter on, and lead it down a hill to the arena to a round pen. And then you start work. And main thing is to try and get it as calm as you can, turning left and right, stopping, backing up, carrying a saddle, carrying a rider, and that's basically what you got to do.
Now, let's say all of you, okay, so obviously if they can't ride the horse complete, they're going to be eliminated. So let's say all of them are, you know, get the horse broke and they get on it and ride it. How is the end obstacle course judged?
Well, you get points for every obstacle you do.
Oh, okay.
And plus you judge through every part of the competition. There's 2 judges this year that are judging the whole thing. So it's there watching you, those 4 round pens at all times. So you're judged on horsemanship skills and how you get your horse broke to ride. Not how quickly you do it, but how good you do it.
Oh, I thought it was a timed thing. Okay, so,
no,
I mean, you have a set amount of time.
Completely judged, yeah.
Do what?
It's completely judged.
Yeah.
So you accumulate points over the first 4 sessions, and they carry over into your obstacle course. So the winner is the person with the most points at the end of the competition.
Gotcha.
And we don't know how many points we got. Yeah, that's all in the judge's hands. We don't know until the very last contestant's gone through. And they tally all those scores up, and then they'll read them out.
And you won it last year, so hopefully you'll do good this year.
Well, I hope so, yes. I hope so. I drew a really exceptional horse last year, and I hope to do the same this year. And, you know, a lot of the people are, you know, 30 years my junior, but that doesn't mean anything. I think that if I just get out there and do my job to the best of my ability, and that horse trusts me in everything I do, we're going to get along with the program, and hopefully we'll come out with the winner's buckle at the end of the show.
So let me, you just made me think about something. So when you're, obviously, I don't know anything about breaking horses, so bear with me. But, I mean, I grew up riding, and I know how to ride, and I know, you know, not completely dumb, but no, we're not breaking any horses. So let me ask you this. When you do your whole groundwork ordeal and you kind of do get through that stage of it or whatever, do you want a horse to buck when you put a saddle on him or not?
Well, I don't mind if they do, because then it shows me what I got to do if he does that when I do ride him, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've always been told, or I've always kind of seen people speak about how, you know, if they don't buck, they're going to do it at a later point, and you kind of want them to get it out of their system. It's what I...
Yeah, I like to see what I've got to ride. That's what I like, you know, to see what I got to ride. That horse that doesn't buck, you know, he might buck all weekend, but I guarantee you, one day, that horse is going to buck. And you're going to get a surprise.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want any surprises.
Right, yeah, no.
My horse bucked last year when I was riding around the arena, actually. I was out of the round pen when my horse decided to buck. Had a little crow hop with the saddle on, and that was all right, but two of them went to bucking outside, and we just had to ride them, and hopefully we get through it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we did. We did.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's almost kind of like, you're kind of like, okay, well, what's wrong if you're not bucking yet? Cause...
Yeah. You got this thought in the back of your head, you know, subconsciously you're going, when's this going to happen? When's this explosion going to go?
Right.
You know, you're all the time thinking that something's going to go here sometime, you know. But
yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't, you know, and you get through. But I like when I first saddle a horse, and I don't ever let my horse off the lens, off my halter and lead rope. That way, if he does go to bucking, I've got control so he can't buck into a panel or things like that, you know. I don't like to let a horse go and just let him buck crazy.
Right.
You know, I think if you've got a hold of that lead rope, you can always keep him safe. Because he doesn't know what it is, and he doesn't know what you want.
Right.
You know, everything's totally new to him. He's just trying to survive so he can go back and eat. That's all the thought is in his mind. How
right.
can I survive this so I can get back out the pasture? You know?
Right. I'm glad you said that. That makes me feel good, because I've said this before. I said the only thing horses care about is breeding, eating, and trying to live.
Well, I think we're the same. I think we're the same.
Well, I mean, humans bring more emotions into things than horses
they
do.
Way more, way more. The horse doesn't have the emotions we have.
Yeah.
I don't think a horse ever truly forgets anything. Here's a for instance. All horses in the wild will synchronize their heartbeat in a herd.
Yeah.
And horses will do this in domestic life too if there's enough of them in the pasture. But there'll always be one horse on guard out there. And when that horse sees something or feels something or senses something, its heartbeat will start to race. And that's when every other horse will come to attention.
Yeah.
So when we go into that round pen, we go in there thinking, well, this is the way I do it. I go in there trying to be as calm as I can be, so I hopefully can be on the same level as that horse. I don't want to go up. I don't want to go down. I want to be on the same level as him.
Yeah.
Whether we can stay there, I never know, you know.
Yeah, because they can feel your heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. They can sense what you're doing, you know. I especially feel it in the first couple of rides you do on a horse. You've got to remain, your body has to no tension in it.
Right.
Because the minute you put tension into your body, that horse is going to feel that tension, and it's going to go right through him, and that's when he could blow up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're looking at you. They have to trust you because you ultimately want the horse to look at the human as a leader.
Exactly. Exactly. They're only looking for a good enough leader.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a good enough leader, they'll do anything for you. You know.
Yeah, because we might get into the whole topic of how people treat them as pets, which, I mean, I can't say anything because I've given my
I love my horses here too, but I'm aware of that's a 1,000-pound animal that will kill me if it's out of control.
Yeah.
At any time, it can get out of control. I don't care how broke it is, how quiet it is. You know, the most accidents I've ever seen are with my quiet old horse because people go to sleep around them. And that's when something, they'll get their foot stepped on or the horse will jump sideways, seeing the cat jump out of a tree or something. You know, that's when accidents happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we go to sleep.
I agree. Yeah. No, I completely, totally agree. And I think there's a difference between, and I could be wrong, but I think there's a difference between people that want to overpower a horse out of insecurity versus somebody that actually has a horse that trusts them and a horse that looks at, I mean, because you see it a lot in the industry. I see a lot of people have a very dominant attitude. They have a very, like, they basically want a horse to be submissive, and I'm sitting there thinking, you've got a bomb that's going to go off at some point in time.
Yeah, and I don't care how big or how strong you are, you can't overpower any horse.
Right. Right. No, I agree. Yeah.
You can't. Yeah, there's people that think they can, but you can't. You can outmaneuver them if you're in the right position. You can change their body, but that's about all you can do.
Yeah. No, I 110% agree, you know, and that's like people get all mouthy about mares and things of that nature and da-da-da-da. If you actually stop and watch horses and, like, watch how they interact in a herd and stuff like that, you know, to me, I feel like the lead mare is not this raging, never been this raging animal.
No, she is the boss mare out there, whoever it is, you know. And if you introduce another horse to that herd, they'll have to find their own pecking order in that herd.
Yeah.
They could be end up number two or they could end up number seven, you know. But they've got to get past that herd mare first, that one in charge. And if she says you're going to drop down the list, well, they're going to drop down the list.
Yeah, I've talked about it before. I've talked about it on this podcast, and I think I'm glad you brought that up because if you ever watch herds go through a pecking order, it can be traumatic actually because it's like they turn into horses and a switch turns on and they're you don't need to intervene. You need to leave them alone and let them figure it out.
They've got to figure things out for themselves. You can't figure it out for them. You're not a horse. I mean, as much as we try, We cannot.
Yep.
That horse is going to figure it out for himself. And people who keep their horses in little stalls all their life and don't let that horse outside, or, you know, because, oh, it's show season and he can't get the sun on him, you know. Horses are meant to be herd animals. They're meant to go out with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're meant to interact with each other. Yeah. So we've done things to them that we shouldn't have done.
I completely agree. And I'm glad that, you know, when I was growing up, my dad was really big about, you know, we would go show and then he wouldn't let us touch them for a couple of days. He'd go, you got to let them be horses now. You got to leave them out. You got to let them be horses.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a time that my grandfather would say, we'll just pull the shoes off and they go out in the pasture and we'll see them in 3 months long. That's, they just got to have that rest. They got to be a horse, you know?
Yeah.
Because we take them out of that.
That would, do you think that the mentality that we're talking about right now, do you think that mentality would help eliminate a lot of people's problems?
Oh, heck yes. You know, I mean, we teach horses to be critters and we teach the horses colic because we put them in certain situations. And, you know, I've never seen a horse that's running in the wild or in pasture have any of those problems. He just knows how to be a horse.
I'm so glad you said that, because I thought the same thing, like, I haven't ridden in a long time, but if you look back at later dates compared to now, it's like there people have all these problems that weren't problems before.
Oh, and yeah. They keep me in, making a good living, you know, because I see problems every week that are human problems, not horse problems. You know, they're made by humans.
I'm glad you. I could not agree more.
they just were made by a human, you know. The only thing you can't do is put that halter and lead rope around that human and give them a good jerk, because half the times that's what needs to happen. It's not the horse.
What? Say that again.
With a horse, you can put a halter and lead rope on him and give him a little jerk around and say, you've got to stand there and that's it, you know. But if you want, if you went and tried to put a rope around to a human's neck and give them a jerk around, they'd bail up, you know, you'd be in trouble. But they've caused the problem, but they want you to fix it. But they caused it in the first place.
That's got to be frustrating from your perspective.
So
because... Well, because, like, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not saying anything nobody already knows. You know, horse people, we can be very stubborn and know it all. And to take your horse to somebody and go, hey, I got a horse problem, fix it. And then the person turns around and goes, well, you're the problem, not the horse. So.
Yes. And that's why it's easy to train horses. It's easy to teach horses. The hardest thing is dealing with the public. Dealing with people, because as humans, we have preconceived ideas.
Mm.
Horse doesn't have any. All his idea is, how can I survive this to go back out to eating? You know, that's all he thinks about.
Yeah.
And yet the human has a bad day at work and then goes out to play with his horse and wonder why his horse is a mess. It's because they've taken all their problems out of that horse.
Yeah.
Instead of leaving them and going out and joining their horse, nuh-uh. They've got to take everything with them. All their garbage from the day or the night or whenever, they take to their horse. And the poor horse goes, well, heck, you're having a bad day and now you want me to behave myself?
Right. Right, because the horse is looking at them going, you're supposed to be my leader. I mean, if you look at the lead horse in a pack, or not a pack, like dog, but, you know, in a herd, they don't act like like, you know, the human is and expecting to still be a leader.
That's right. Yeah, so we've got to start training people better in how to handling their problems and leaving them away from their horse. When they go to their horse, that should just be their number one focus, is their horse. And I think they'd have a lot better ride and a lot better future with their horse if they did that.
Yeah. Well, it's good business for you because the horse is easy, but the people, you know, you can always have people problems.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, you know, here the human comes and they learn and they got to be a part of their horse's training while it's here. And, yeah, since we started that program where the people have got to come and be a part of it, it's a lot better for the horse, you know.
Oh.
It's nothing worse than sending your horse to a trainer for 90 days and then you go and pick it up and take it home and it bucks you off in 3 days or something. And the only person that gets the bad rep is the trainer.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I want you to be a part of your horse's training because I don't want to be in that situation when you take your horse home.
Right.
Well, I mean,
like we just said, the horse is the easy part, you know, making sure that the human and the horse are going to be good going forward without you. It makes sense for them to want to be a part. I mean, they need to be a part of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so hard to teach sometimes. Sometimes you just want to take a stick to that person's head. Just take them out the back of the barn sometimes, you know. They're a bit thick, some people. But
yeah.
I love what I do.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to retire here and not do as many colts, but I'll help people with their colts, you know.
Yeah.
But this is my last year getting on colts. You know, I'll help people start their own colts.
Now,
and
how
I'll
many?
Do it all off my pony horse. The person has to, once I go through my little routine of what I do to get their horse ready to saddle, then they'll saddle their horse. I'll pony it around. They'll get on and off and on and off and on and off. And when I think they're comfortable, then I'll lead their horse around for them. Round the round pen and make sure that horse is not going to buck them off or anything before I let go of that horse. And they'll ride around. And we've had great results in 2 or 3 days doing it that way.
Yeah.
But the owner's been on their own horse, you know, just riding around.
I would think that makes perfect sense to have another horse kind of show.
Well, yeah, that horse keeps that other horse quiet, calms it down. It's really amazing. It's really amazing to watch. The people that come to these competitions and see us with our pony horse doing these things off our pony horse, they're just amazed at what we get done in such a short time. And, you know, there'll be people, thousands of people. I've been to Canada and everywhere doing these cult sightings in front of an audience of 5,000 people, you know.
Holy cow. Where was that at?
That was at the deer in Alberta, Canada.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they never left the round pen the whole time we were there. It was awesome, you know. I've done horse fairs and things like that. Like this weekend, I hope we get 1,000 people there at this contest, you know, because it's grown that much. That's nothing to have 1,000 people there. It'll be good.
Yeah.